Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, May 18th. Different states are reopening different kinds of businesses and beaches and other things to different degrees, even under similar circumstances. The beaches in much of the Northeast open starting next weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Governor Cuomo in New York announced that over the weekend, for example, to some people's surprise, but with certain distancing precautions. But in hard-hit New York City, not for swimming, only for walking. Look at California. This is from USA Today. Last Tuesday, the California State University system that comprises 23 campuses such as Fresno State, San Diego State, and San Jose State announced it would cancel in-person classes for the fall semester. But the same article says Governor Gavin Newsom on the same day said more businesses could reopen statewide and approved requests from counties to move ahead more quickly if they have been minimally harmed by the pandemic. Business offices can reopen with appropriate precautions if their employees cannot easily telecommute. So welcome back office buildings in some smaller places anyway, but not the college campuses in some of the same communities. That's California. Then there's Georgia with its controversial reopening. You've all heard about this. We're in week three now. There has been no big spike, but the new case rate isn't declining either. Is that success or is that failure? What's the lesson for other places from Georgia? The news this weekend was full of stories of people who defied states' orders and reopened their businesses anyway, or were big on social media denouncing the rules as liberal snowflake big government, and then guess what? They got the virus. Some of them even died. NPR's weekend edition Saturday, some of you heard this with Scott Simon, had a moving story about one of those public denouncers who did then actually die of the virus and the tension in how people feel about him and what they give themselves permission to say about him. There were social media posts like, you got what you deserved. And then, of course, there was his family, so hurt by that, even if he behaved badly or ignorantly before he got sick. There's one about a bar owner in upstate New York, another about a barber in upstate New York who opened illegally and then got sick. You get the tension, right? Everybody gets the tension. I think anybody can get the tension. I mean, maybe those stories will dissuade people from going back too fast more than even Anthony Fauci could, but the tension is real. Small business people are experiencing real tension in their economic versus risk-avoiding lives, right? Employees, too. How much virus risk versus how much running out of money, even with the trillions of dollars in benefits, still very imperfect, that have been passed and begun to be distributed. But that's all about work. There's another category, too, that I really want to mention, which I think we should separate as more ethically troubling, and that's about the patrons of the stores and the bars and the people at the beach and on the street if they're not keeping their distance from people they didn't go there with. USA Today has an op-ed now by Christian Schneider called Wisconsin's Economy is Reopening and It's a Hot Coronavirus Mess. Don't Do What We Did. That's the title of the op-ed. It describes photos going around on social media the last few days of people in bars. It says, quote, fortunately, the patrons were not drinking shots of flaming Lysol or Clorox teenies. Unfortunately, there were no masks to be found, and the only thing drinkers were distancing from were their inhibitions. Just hours earlier, it reminds us, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had struck down a statewide safer-at-home order that, among other things, closed non-essential businesses and ordered people to stay in their homes with limited exceptions. The order itself was fairly standard for states across America, so the Wisconsin Writer advises the rest of the country in USA Today, don't do what we did. We'll talk to USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page in just a minute. And the jumble persists in the highest office in the land. Donald Trump keeps giving mixed messages. Yesterday, it was saying on national television that he wants there to be packed stadiums again. But everyone wants that. Less clear is whether he's implying it should happen sooner than the public health officials say is safe. And he wants those packed stadiums, remember, not just for sports. His sons, Eric and Don Jr., are out this weekend saying the coronavirus response is a plot by Democrats to cancel Trump rallies. I'm not making that up. Here's Eric Trump on Fox.
They think they're taking away Donald Trump's greatest tool, which is being able to go into an arena and fill it with 50,000 people every single time, right? So they will, and you watch. They'll milk it every single day between now and November 3rd. And guess what? After November 3rd, coronavirus will magically all of a sudden go away and disappear, and everybody will be able to reopen. They're trying to deprive him of his greatest asset.
On that, we bring in Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan. Hope you're staying safe. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be with you.
So before we get to Eric Trump, that op-ed from Wisconsin in your newspaper with the people in no masks and shoulder to shoulder in the bars after the state Supreme Court nullified the governor's shutdown orders, is that our immediate national future?
Well, we do not have a consistent national standard for what governors and state legislatures are supposed to do. And so we end up with this incredible patchwork as public officials across the country struggle with trying to find the right balance, to find the right course forward to protect the public health, but do what they can to open things back up, to help the economy, to let people get back to their lives. And we see all different kinds of answers, right? We still have some states that are completely shut down, three states in the District of Columbia, and we have some states that are pretty much opened up, and it's as though we're living on different planets.
And the legal question is a valid controversy. I find the legal question interesting. For how long can a governor, by executive order in a democracy, order whole sectors of the private economy closed, right? How long should that emergency authority last before the legislature has to be allowed to have a say? If the political parties were reversed, I'll bet a lot of Democrats might be protesting, oh, those Republican governors telling us what to do. That's not a fake issue, I don't think. Do you know if it's happening in other states' court systems too?
Well, that is exactly what happened in Wisconsin, right? The state legislature, controlled by Republicans, challenged the power of the Democratic governor to impose these rules. The courts agreed with the legislature, said the legislature got to have a role. But what happened next was the legislature decided not to take a role. So you end up with mayors and county executives in Wisconsin making their own decisions. So you talk about a patchwork of rules across the United States. There is a big patchwork of rules just across the state of Wisconsin. And, yeah. You know, it's. I think there's the legal question about how long do governors get to exercise emergency authority like this. There's also a question about how long will citizens abide by emergency regulations that their governors set, because there is a limit to the number of people law enforcement authorities could arrest if a lot of Americans decided, I'm just going to ignore the rules right. The governor in my state has set.
And quarantine fatigue. But the reason I said in the intro that I find it ethically questionable is not that individuals are willing to take risks for themselves. It's when they're willing to take risks by putting themselves in large groups, which is what can reignite community spread in a large way that really threatens the hospital system again, that really threatens vulnerable people in society. The risks are not just for themselves if they're congregating in groups. And I don't know Wisconsin law, but can't the state at least enforce standards for bars and other things that reopen, social distancing standards, for example? I know you're a Washington correspondent. I don't expect you to actually know the answer, but maybe that's the next wave of debate.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, there's an ethical debate also on this. It's been so interesting to me that masks have become the source of a cultural divide in this country, that it is in some places being seen as big government out of control to require people to wear masks when they go to the workplace or into stores. And the thing about, you talked about the ethical debate, the thing about masks is they do more to protect other people than they do to protect you, right? The point of wearing a mask is so that you don't infect other people if you are have the virus or don't have any symptoms but have the virus. And so you're not, it's not that you're putting yourself at such risk when you refuse to wear a mask. You're putting everybody around you at greater risk, even if they're wearing masks.
Ricardo in Savannah, you're on WNYC. Hey, Ricardo, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for taking the call. I, you know, I just want to say that I'm not going to say where I work, but I work for the media down here. So I'm in hospitals and in various places. I go down to the beach to cover stories, and I'm amazed that people are not taking it seriously at all. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was down at our beach, which was closed off then, and I watched three families lifting their children through the fences and over the barriers to get access to the beach. You know, we go to places and you have to interview people. We try to stay apart from them. We, you know, we stay at least 6-10 feet away from people. We don't touch them. We don't put microphones on them anymore. But nobody's taking it seriously. Nobody wants to wear a mask. People want to sit and go about life as though nothing's going on down here. And it's really kind of frightening.
Savannah's a diverse community. The demonstrations have been overwhelmingly white. And we know who gets most affected and most severely affected by the numbers of cases, by the severity of who's dying and getting the sickest. You know, it does run along race and class lines. Do you see those kinds of differences and who's jumping the fences at the beaches and things like that? Can you tell as a reporter?
The time that I was at, it's been 2 weeks ago. Most of the folks that were going to the beach were not white, but I know for a fact here, you know, we have a few parks here in town that are basically frequented by black people. And I tend to drive past those every day while I'm at work just to see what the numbers are. You know, it's like I'll drive past a restaurant to see. And the two parks that you know, mostly frequented by black folks, and they're in slightly small neighborhoods, you know, poor neighborhoods. And they're packed. People are packed on the basketball courts. There are benches and picnic tables. People are packed on the benches and the picnic tables. And, you know, when you talk to people about, you know, being a little bit afraid or do you have any concerns at all, you get a blank stare. I mean, it's like It's almost as though they don't know what's going on. And I don't know how, because the media has been yelling about this forever.
Ricardo.
On the other hand, I see people who clearly don't want to wear the mask and do the things because they're making a political statement and they're kind of poking their finger in your eye. So you see both things.
And those people tend to be white, yeah. Ricardo, thank you very much. And I'm going to leave it there, Ricardo, and get some other folks on. And Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. There's kind of a racial tone deafness, at very least, a dismissiveness on the part of the protesters, if their communities aren't being as affected and they're the ones the loudest for reopening?
Yes, of course, because there are counties that have had no diagnosed cases and, you know, yet they have the same strains that all of us have when they're forced to shelter at home and their businesses are forced to shut down. I do think you see not just a racial aspect to the people who are most likely to protest. It's a political statement, and it shows the power of the president's bully pulpit, because you see the president expressing skepticism. You see the president refusing to wear a mask. You see the president objecting that you can't listen only to the scientists when you're making a decision about when to open up. And that has resonated with his voters. And I've been very struck by the fact that three of the states with the biggest protests against the shutdowns are the three states that are likely to decide the presidential election in 2020, the three states that decided it in 2016, and that's Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
And so here's a caller from Madison, right on cue. Robert, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for checking in from the capital of Wisconsin.
Hey, Brian. I guess I differ with Susan on one point. The protest here in Madison was not particularly large, given the overall population of the state. But aside from the state Supreme Court decision, it is interesting that there is a real racial divide in terms of fatalities and cases here in Wisconsin, also very much of an urban-rural divide about, I think, people wearing masks and taking precautions. And it's sad to say, but I just think despite our vaunted K-12 education system here in Wisconsin, there's just a lot of folks out there who are dumber than a bag of hammers.
That's one way. Blame the people for being stupid. But on the political comment that he made, Susan, any thought?
Well, I think Robert makes something that's very important for us to keep in mind and very important for news stories to note. And that is these demonstrations, some of them have been small, some of them have been a little larger. But we know from national polls that the overwhelming majority of Americans are more concerned about opening up too fast with health consequences than they are about opening up too slowly with economic consequences. By overwhelming margin, 60% and 70% of Americans say they want to go slow and be cautious, and that's despite the costs that they've seen in their own lives with the 36 million Americans now filing for unemployment claims. So at least at the moment, there continues to be a fair amount of patience among Americans generally, but you do see some protests, and the protests have gotten pretty loud in some places.
But if it's a small group of protesters, it generalizes to a big group of Republican lawmakers, at least in the case of Wisconsin, if I'm understanding that story correctly. After the Wisconsin Supreme Court overruled the governor's ability to keep businesses shut down unilaterally, and you were just saying this, the Republican majority in at least one house of the Wisconsin legislature would not go along with extending the shutdown orders. And so that's enough law. That's not 12 protesters with AR-15s. That's a lot of lawmakers who have political power, who presumably represent a lot of people around the state.
The fact is, majority doesn't always rule, even in a democracy. If it did, we'd have much stricter gun controls than we do now. Yeah, I know it's a shocking thing, but it's true. Political power doesn't translate completely into numbers. We have any number of issues on which Americans are generally united, but the politics of the issue go in the other direction. And in some states, including Wisconsin, that's what we're seeing playing out.
And Dorothea in Atlanta, as we go back to Georgia. Dorothea, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello again, Brian. This is your number one fan. How are you?
I'm okay. We don't rank them, but go ahead.
Well, you always comment on my accent because I live in Atlanta, but I'm obviously not from here. So one of the things that we're seeing here is that people are slowly but surely starting to wear masks, but it's because it's being... It's a policy and procedure that's being thrust upon them. So I'll give you an example. If you go to the shops, which now, you know, that they're opening up in grocery stores, Amazon is actually, they're an owner, as you know, of Whole Foods. They're handing out masks so that you can shop in the store and encouraging people to socially distance. Other than the senior hours in the morning, I was recently at Trader Joe's this weekend. I did see that they're not telling you that you have to wear the mask in order to enter the store, but they are asking you to, and that you're no longer allowed to bring your reusable or recyclable bag to bag your own groceries. One of the things that I am noticing is that it seems that there sort of is a bit of a racial divide as well. You know, as you know, Atlanta is a predominantly African-American city. I do see a great number of people because we opened our zoo this weekend and I live very close to it in Grant Park. Mm-hmm. I am seeing a great number of people, families and what have you, people who are diverse and of color, wearing their masks more frequently than my Caucasian counterparts.
Interesting. And what about, if you can just give us one Atlanta resident's impression of the fact that after 2.5 weeks now, since the controversial reopening order from Governor Brian Kemp that even President Trump had denounced before it went into effect as too early and not legitimized based on the science, The reports that I heard, and I saw your mayor, Mayor Bottoms, on television this weekend saying, well, there has not been a spike in cases. However, there has also not been a decline in the case rate. Is that affecting people, as far as you could tell, one way or the other, as a success or a failure?
Yes, I think that they are becoming much more bold. You have the kind of two factions of people. You've got a group of people who I feel are educating themselves, and they're wearing their masks and their gloves, and you see them socially distancing from others when they go for walks or in the grocery store, or they have to interact with them like at a nail salon or a hair, you know, salon or styling or barber. A lot of small businesses are really heeding the CDC guidelines. Then you have a great number of people who are extremely bold. No mask, no gloves. I was at the post office midweek last week, and literally somebody was sort of like right on the back of me, and I had to just very nicely say, you see that square on the floor? That's where you're supposed to be standing, you know. I think that, you know, to your point, it's sort of people are becoming who they want to become and how they want to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. But I do hope that the number of cases decreases.
Dorothea, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate you checking in with us again. And I guess in a way, Susan, this is a big national experiment right now with a jumble that we've been talking about throughout this segment. Different places, based on their politics, based on their cultures, to some degree, to meaningful degrees, based on the science in their neighborhood or their towns or their counties. There's a big national experiment that's going on. And there are either going to be spikes or there aren't going to be spikes. And people are going to find certain kinds of death rates acceptable or not acceptable. Sometimes it's not the death rates among people like them. And if those are the only people in power, that's troubling. But we're entering into a period of a great national experiment.
Yes, absolutely. And watching for what happens, the Georgia example has been encouraging. Nobody wanted to see a big spike in cases, despite the controversial action of the governor. Texas also opened up. They saw a big spike over the weekend. We're watching that to see whether that persists. We don't know what's going to happen.
Do you ever think, gee, Americans are so spoiled. People in other countries. We have somebody who tweeted during this segment, said, stop calling it quarantine fatigue. There are no quarantines in this country except for people who have gotten sick or exposed to people getting sick. And that's right. The phrase has taken off nationally, quarantine fatigue. And a quarantine technically is different than a stay-at-home order. I don't know if you noticed at the beginning of this in New York. I'm going off on a tangent here, but I think it's interesting. At the beginning of this in New York, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announced a shelter-in-place order citywide. And Governor Cuomo said, no, 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 no. We don't do shelter in place. That sounds like a terrorism drill. This isn't terrorism. And so he called it New York on pause. And that's what the New York State policy is called to this day, pause. So that's got a different meaning than shelter in place, which has a different meaning than lockdown, which has a different meaning than quarantine. And yet those things all come together in the public vocabulary to some degree. But do you ever think Americans are so spoiled? Because people in other countries weren't protesting much stricter. Yes, lockdowns. Yes, quarantines. You know, we had a caller from Bologna, Italy, who talked about how police would stop her and ask her what she was doing when she would take out the garbage. And we had a caller who had just come back from Israel who talked about how you needed a permit to drive your car. Maybe Americans just are so spoiled in general that we think we can go back to normal in our personal lives as sort of a birthright.
So I don't think that. What I've thought as I've watched this story over the past couple months is how compassionate Americans are, how much Americans want to pull together. I've seen kindnesses in my own life with people I know well and not well and trying to help one another. I'm struck by how smart Americans are. They move by scientists and companies to try to work as quickly as possible on a vaccine, and the faith that Americans have that we will do that and we will get there first. But you also wonder if our politics is as good as our people, and a kind of yearning for a stronger and more consistent political policy to address this huge challenge.
And I'm glad you brought up the selflessness, because even if there's selfishness or being spoiled, there's so much selflessness and people helping people that I'm glad you brought up, because that's obviously part of the American equation too. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thanks as always.
Hey, Brian, thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.